Okay, good afternoon. It is. Welcome to the LSE. My name is Peter Ramsey. I am paid by the LSE to study the criminal law, particularly. I also study the human rights law. That's part of my interests. And I teach criminal law and human rights law and civil liberties. And if you were to get a place here, you would come across me for sure in the first year, because criminal law is a compulsory first year subject, and I teach some of the lectures on there. So what I'm going to do this afternoon, is just talk briefly, take you through the nuts and bolts of the course, the structure of the course, the kind of things we teach, and how we teach it, how we go about that. And then I'll talk a little bit about why you might want to pay the LSE £27,000 or more in order to do that here, what you might be in your mind about whether that's a good idea or not, and then I'll take any questions that you have. So I'll go through the structure of the course, first of all, so real nuts and bolts. The first year, you do 5 compulsory courses, the law of obligations, which means contract and tort, to those of you who know anything about it already. Is taught in one course, a course on property, a course on public law, a course on criminal law, and an introduction to the legal system. Now, these 5 courses are compulsory. Everybody has to take them. And then in the second year, you have 4 optional courses from a list, which I'll show you in a minute. So you can choose 4 courses from a long list. And then in the third year, you have to do a course called jurisprudence, which is the philosophy or the theory of law as such. That's compulsory, and then there are 3 further options. So there's 7 optional courses in total. There's the list of options. This varies a little bit from year to year. It's not always the same, depending on which staff are around and so on. But that'll give you an idea. So administrative law, commercial contracts, law of business associations, advanced torts, medical law, civil liberties and human rights, which I teach on as well, information technology and law, the conflict of laws, family law, the law and institutions of the European Union, the law of evidence. It goes on and on. A very wide variety of optional courses, from which you can take 7 in total over the second and third year. We think it's one of the largest, widest range of options available in the UK. That's partly a consequence of the department being quite a large department, there being a lot of staff in the department relative to the number of students. So there are a very wide range of options. As I say, some come in, some go out. In addition, you can do an assessed essay, a dissertation, as a substitute. I think it's there, a full unit essay, as a substitute for one of the 7 courses on a subject of your choice, a law-related subject of your choice, providing that we have somebody who can supervise that, providing it's not so specialised or peculiar that nobody can supervise it. So that's an option. And you can also take a course from outside the law department. So you can take a course from any other department of the LSE, providing that the other department accepts you, and so do we. So that's that you can do it. But in principle, that's available if you want to do subjects from other departments. Very commonly that economics subjects are done by law students, but also language courses and so on. So that's a possibility too. And in theory, you can do a course if we don't teach a course that is available in another college of London University. You can do that, providing the other college accepts you. And occasionally people do that. You'll notice that 2 of the courses here are marked out in red, the European Union law and the second property course, property 2. And the reason for that is that together with the first year subjects, they constitute a law qualifying degree. So a law qualifying degree, for those of you who don't know, is a degree that means that you have met the academic requirements that allow you to go on to do the legal practice course or the bar professional training course and to do the training courses that you need if you wish to qualify as a lawyer in the European Union. So you would need to take, if you want to be able to qualify as a lawyer later on and to use this degree without having to do further academic courses, you need to do those 2 options in addition to the first year compulsory courses. And they are, as a consequence, quite big courses. So that's the outline of the structure of the course. You can, of course, not do these courses, in which case you don't get a law qualifying degree. You get a law degree, an LLB, but it won't allow you to go on to do the legal training, professional training courses, unless you go somewhere else and study the European Union law or the extra property law. And that is, just to emphasise a point I'll make later, you can do that. You do not have to become a lawyer in order to study an LLB. You don't even have to want to be a lawyer in order to study an LLB, and I'll come back to that. The way we teach is still largely through lectures and classes. Some of the optional courses are taught through two-hour seminars, but generally the classes are taught through lectures. The courses are taught through lecture and classes. A lecture is an hour of somebody like me talking in a room like this. Sometimes they're a bit more interactive. Probably in the time you're here, they're going to change quite a bit. But at the moment, it's somebody like me talking for an hour with slides and notes and all of that. And then classes are an hour spent with, again, somebody like me, or possibly with a postgraduate student, although generally in the law department, you'll be taught mainly by full-time members of staff. Where we'll go through something that we've raised in the lecture in much, much more depth. So we'll take a little part of the curriculum on a particular topic, and we'll go into it in much more depth. And that is supported, that structure is supported by course handouts, reading lists, and so on. As I'm sure your teachers will have told you, the key difference is that you're much more on your own. At university when you're learning. It's a move away from classes and homework, taking away homework which you bring back to your teachers and mark, to independent study. We will give you books, we will suggest to you books that you can buy or read in the library, and articles from scholarly journals, and in the case of law, legal judgments. And we'll ask you some questions about those and say, go away and read this stuff and come back with an answer to the question. So it's much more open-ended and it's much more book-based, although you'll find now that a great deal of the materials we use are also available on various electronic sources, particularly the legal judgments. There are specialised electronic sources, so all of that is available in that way. We assess the course mostly through closed book exams. So there are some assessed written work, for example, the full unit essay. But most of the courses are are assessed through closed book exams. You have to pass the first year. So at the end of the first year, you have to pass in order to proceed. The first year doesn't in any way. Your first year marks don't contribute to your final result. But you have to pass. If you should fail, and very few people do fail, but if you should, you get lots of opportunities to resit. So it conceivably can delay your progress for a year, but generally even the people who fail resit in September of the same year and go on into the second year. But you only have to pass the first year. Your final grade is based on your second and third year results. So your final grade is an average of your, based on an average of your second and third year results. So that's a brief outline of the way we teach and assess. In addition to the teachers on each course that you'll take, you'll have an academic advisor who'll be a member of staff, full-time member of staff, they don't necessarily teach you. They may teach you, as it happens on some courses you may choose to take, but they're not necessarily going to teach you. But they will be a point of contact for you all the way through the course, whose job is to make sure that any obstacles to you completing your degree are overcome. It may be that if there's some catastrophe at home and you have to leave the school for some period, or if there's some, or if you become ill, or there's various obstacles like that, the first person you come to talk to is your academic advisor, and they're the person you kind of keep in touch with about any problems. And insofar as you do have problems, they're the person who can then guide you to the place you need to be. So some people have difficulties with language. Some people come from abroad and they've passed all their qualifications. But when they get here, it turns out the learning law in English is more difficult than they thought. So they go to the academic advisor, don't be shy. That problem can be solved through various language courses that the school runs. And the way of doing that would be to go through the academic advisor. The academic advisor will also take you through the first week that you're here and runs various classes in the first week of your first year. The academic advisor assesses your class, goes through your class reports. All your teachers will write reports on you over the course of the 3 years, and the academic advisor will meet with you, and you'll meet periodically with them to discuss progress, to look at what you're doing well, what you're doing badly, what you might need. The academic advisor is your first port of call for references. If you need a reference, an academic reference, has to approve your option choices, although that's normally straightforward. And as I say, for general problem solving needs. In addition, if there's a problem that you can't resolve with your academic advisor, then there's a departmental tutor and an entire structure of pastoral support on top of that. Only do one degree program with another university at the moment, although that may change. But at the moment, we only do the double degree program with Columbia University. If you go on it, you do your first 2 years at the LSE and your second 2 years at Columbia. You end up with an LLB and an American law degree, a JD. Sounds fantastic, is unbelievably expensive because you're paying Columbia fees for the second 2 years. There are scholarship funds available for that, but they're largely American funds, and you'll be in the competition. It's extremely tough academically to get in. The rule of thumb is you have to get 65 plus in your first year exams to get in, so it's difficult. And the reason it's difficult is because you're going into what is in the United States a postgraduate program. So all law degrees are postgraduate, are graduate degrees for people who already have a first degree in the US. So it's very tough to get in, and it's expensive, but it's there for some people, and every year five or six people get on it. So that is the one double degree program that we do at the moment. There is also a degree in anthropology and law. It's the only joint honours degree that we offer. It's administered not by the law department, by the anthropology department. That's the rough structure of the 3 years. You'll notice that in the course of the 3 years, you can do all of the seven core subjects that you need to do in order for your degree to be a law qualifying degree, so that you met the academic requirements that allow you to go on and do the legal professional training courses. So the law and anthropology degree can also be a law qualifying degree for those of you who might be interested in mixing your law with anthropology. So that's there as well. Okay. I suppose before I ask the question why study law at the LSE, let's just take a look. Just want to look at a couple of other things just to mention them. I mean, you can ask me more about them afterwards. If you look at the Law Department website, I mean, I just really recommend, a great deal of information is available to you on the Law Department website. Go and have a look around and explore, much more than I'm going to be able to tell you today. If, for example, just to show you, I mean, if you look at the programs, you get all the information about the LLB is there. So you go to there, and you've got undergraduate admissions, admissions criteria, lots of information there. You can find out about us and who we are. Here am I, just to... You don't get a picture, but you get a picture of some of us. But anyway, it tells you what we do. But what I'll just take a look at is here. Here's information for students. For those of you who are interested, I'll just pick out two things from the various links down here. One is mooting, for those of you who know about it. So mooting is a competitive system of legal argument. People can enter the competitions, and you take what we call a moot point, an undecided point in the law, and people argue, take sides and argue it in front of a judge. There are two types. We do internal moots and competitions, which are just internal to the school, and then we take part in a number of the external, both national and international, mooting competitions that there are, and they're listed down there. And members of staff are available to support, and there are postgraduate students who provide training and so on for all of that. For those of you who are interested, it's particularly of interest to people who are going to the bar, but it's also a terrific way of sharpening up your legal argument skills for anyone who's doing the course for whatever reason as well. So that's mooting, and some of you may be interested in pro bono work, which is here, and lots of opportunities for LSE law students working in the Royal Courts of Justice, personal support unit, legal advice clinics run by city law firms, the street law project that students here run, and so on. So there's things on this website. Go take a look. But feel free to ask me more about those in a minute if you want to know more. But those kind of things are available on the website. So why study law at the LSE? Why study law at the LSE? Well, one of the things you'll find out, especially if you're in my classes, is the first thing you want to do if you want to do well is analyse the question. Think about the question. If you want to do well in any academic exam, what are you being asked? Why study law at the LSE? Well, that analyse, it comes into two parts. Why study law at all? And then why do it at the LSE? So I'll just briefly address those two questions. Why do you want to study law? Think about that before you make your applications. Notice that it's not the same question as why do I want to be a lawyer? They're not the same question. Why do I want to study law? Why do I want to be a lawyer? Now, there's lots of reasons to want to be a lawyer. You could want to be a lawyer because you want to earn a load of money, lots of money, and retire early and drive a fast car and play golf or whatever it is that those kind of lawyers do. I don't know. You could do that. That's fair enough. And indeed, many of our graduates go on to do that very successfully. You could want to prevent miscarriages of justice, save people from the death penalty in the United States, do work against torture, and all of that, and that's a good reason, and some of our graduates go on to do that too. You may just be the kind of sympathetic person who likes hearing people's stories, and lawyers get to hear people's stories quite a lot, although I wish you all the best if that's your motive for being a lawyer, in my experience. On the other hand, you might be a very competitive person who likes to win fights and not lose them, in which case you'll love being a legal practitioner, I imagine. You may be ambitious. You want to be a judge, be a decision maker, or a politician. These are very good. Being a lawyer is a very good training ground for that kind of public service. All of these things are good reasons to be, or reasons at least, to be a lawyer. But they're not necessarily quite the same as studying reasons to study law. I mean, obviously, the desire to be a lawyer or ambition in relation to legal practice is a very strong motivation for doing a law degree, and a good one. It's a good one, providing that you understand that a law degree, an academic law degree, an LLB, is not a professional legal training course. It is not a course that's intended, designed to train you as a lawyer. It is rather an academic course which the professional lawyers require you to take as a precondition of training to be a lawyer. And so what we study is not, it's some of what you need to know in order to be a lawyer, but it is not by and large a question of professional skills. That you do if you go on to do the legal practice course or the bar professional training course in the UK. I raise it because it's not the only way. It's an academic precondition for being a lawyer or training to be a lawyer, but it's not the only one. It's not the only way to achieve that, to get that precondition. You can do another degree and then do a graduate diploma in law. It's longer and it's a bit more expensive. However, what it means is that your first degree, you can, if you have a passion for English literature or for physics or for whatever it might be, that might be the thing to do, but you still want to be a lawyer because you want to earn loads of money and retire early and play golf. It might be a good idea to do the other degree, which you already know you really would enjoy spending a lot of time doing, and then do the one-year hard, forced one-year law qualifying degree at the end. So just think about that if there's already something you're very keen on doing. So that's another option. And also, you just might want to think before you decide to commit yourself to 3 years of an LLB about what it involves. I just want to focus on three aspects of what the LLB involves. The first is that law is the endeavour to govern human society by rules, with rules. So that's what you're studying. You're going to study the endeavour to govern human society through the use of rules. And what lawyers characteristically do is they try to construct general rules that will apply to many, many factual situations. Easy ways of deciding what to do in certain circumstances because we have a general rule. And that requires a very particular type of reasoning, type of logic, the adjudicative logic that tries to get particular cases to determine whether a particular factual case falls under a general rule and how to construct the best kind of general rules to encompass many factual cases. And one of the alarming things you'll find about studying law, it's particularly alarming in the first year, is how much of law is undecided, unsettled, contradictory, got holes in it, doesn't add up. One of the things that we will focus on is all of those bits. We're going to focus all the way through on all the bits that don't quite work, not on the easy bits that are obvious, where everybody knows what the law is, but on all the tricky bits, where everybody's in an argument. The judges argue with each other, and the politicians argue, and lawyers argue, and academics argue. We'll be focused on all those tricky bits. So law is a world of argument, and you will enjoy it if you like the construction of rigorous argument. If that's something, if logic is something that appeals to you, and critical logic, the criticism of other people's arguments, the pulling apart of arguments, that kind of activity appeals to you, that's the characteristic activity of law, of the legal practice itself, the practice of law, but also of the study of law. The second thing I'd like to emphasise, which may sound obvious and trite, but it'll seem anything but trite when you're here, or if you should be here, or anywhere else studying law, is that those arguments are all in words. There are no pictures. This is one of the criminal law textbooks, first year textbook. It's 912 pages, including the bibliography. And it's all words. There are no pictures, no diagrams, no formula, no numbers. If numeracy is your thing, you're going to find law really disappointing. You know, there's just nothing there for you. It's all words and lots of words. There's reading, and then there's reading, and then there's more reading. And after that, we'll ask you to do a bit more reading. So, be warned, you've got to like it, and it helps to like it. You don't have to like it, you know, but it helps. And it helps to like it, to do it well. So words, and it's not just developing a capacity for reading and speaking, but for enjoying the nuance of language, what lawyers characteristically do, which is to play with the meaning of words and see what they can get out of them, to enjoy that aspect of thinking, the words that we express ourselves in. If you enjoy that, it'll make a big difference. The third is that law is a social science. Law is it's the study of a particular way of governing human society, and therefore it is the study of human society. It is one way to study human society. If we just nip back to the list of options, you can see, you know, most of human life is there, and we could add on more, you know, all of human life, perhaps regrettably, but nevertheless, pretty much all of human life is somewhere governed by law. So you are studying society when you're studying law. You're studying what people do. You're studying how they relate to each other. I think especially at the LSE, and here we'd start to move into why study law at the LSE, that's what we are particularly interested in. I can think of no other law school where that aspect of law is more at the forefront of the way we think about it and the way that we teach it. That law is not just, you know, we're not just going to force feed you a load of cases and what judges said and rules and then you come back, regurgitate all that back to us. We're interested in the context in which these laws arise. Why is the law like this? What's the social situation it's trying to govern? Is this the best way of doing it? How did it come to be this way? Is it as it should be? For example, I teach criminal law, but my interest is in the relationship, my real driving interest in that is in the relationship of the state and the citizen. The criminal law is a great long list of duties. If you fail in those duties, the state can punish you for them. That's what the criminal law is. And so, for me, it's a royal road to understanding the political character of our society, what those duties are, how judges interpret them, what they think about them, how they justify them. All of these give you real insight into the nature, the character, political character of our society, how we imagine the legitimate relations between state officials and ordinary citizens. So, and in other areas, we will be interested in that in the same way. So it helps a lot if you're interested in the way that human beings relate in states, or in families, or in businesses, or in markets, or in all the various ways in which human beings relate to each other, because that's what the law is about. It's about trying to impose and construct rules that make those relationships more tolerable, more productive, and so on. So it's a social science. And so lastly, why do it the LSE? That's why study law. Why study it at the LSE? Well, you'll know we've got a reputation. That's probably why you're here. The place has a reputation. It has a reputation primarily for its research, for what myself and my colleagues do. We do it well. There's no reason to have false modesty. We're one of the best law schools in the UK and probably in the world for that reason. It's pioneering what my colleagues do. Many of the courses that are taught now routinely, like labour law, criminology and so on, were pioneered in the English-speaking world at the LSE. And that continues to this day, I think. The criminal law course that I'm involved in teaching has subject matters, topics within it that I'm fairly sure are not taught, or not taught in very many leading institutions elsewhere. Take a very innovative approach to all of that. And the reason that we do that is because we are engaged very much in law in its contemporary moment, in its the way that policy is driving legal development now, and this is a long-standing tradition in the school, rather than more traditional doctrinal questions. So you're going to be taught by authoritative contributors to legal debate, and what we do for a living is ask ourselves difficult questions about law and try to answer them. And we need, if we're to stay ahead of the legal game, to come up with new answers. That's what I need to do. I need to come up with new answers to the problems posed in the contemporary criminal law. So, and the advantage, I think, for you of being taught by people like me and my colleagues is that what we do for a living is ask difficult questions. And so what we will do, the way we will teach you, is by asking you difficult questions. We will ask you questions to which we do not know the answers, or at least if we think we know the answers, we know for sure that our colleagues won't agree with us in the same specialised area. So the questions we ask, and this is right from the week one in criminal law, we'll start asking you questions about which there is no agreement on the answer amongst judges, amongst legal scholars, amongst politicians or the political classes. We'll straight away start asking you those kind of difficult, hard questions. We'll give you big, thick books. We say, go read page 195 to page 342 of that and read these cases, and here's some questions. Come back and let's talk about them. And so we will not be giving you model answers. We will not be giving you questions with right answers. We will not be giving you nice bite-sized chunks of material to learn. We will rather be giving you rather large open-ended amounts of material and asking you to think about that and to come up with what you think is an answer to the question. And at first that's very hard, but I think it's a lot more what we're giving you the opportunity to engage in is something that can't be taught, but you can learn it. And that is how to develop your own independent judgment about questions and issues that arise in the law. That's really what we're about. These are the marking criteria for your exams.
The first class award pass is awarded when the essay demonstrates clarity of analysis, engages directly with the question, and attempts an independent and critical interpretation of the issues raised. The upper second, when the essay attempts a systematic analysis of the issues raised and shows some signs of independent thought.
So what we are really interested in is you developing a capacity to stand on your own two feet in legal materials. And those are the criteria we'll assess you on, because that's what we have to do. We have to stand on our own two feet in the legal materials if we're to write what we write and do the work that we do. I think that's the reason one of the reasons we have the reputation we have is because legal employers or any employer is going to value that capacity. If you come out of here with a 2-1 or a good 2-1 or a first, they know that you can stand on your own two feet and will not need your hand held to get through the legal materials that you would have to think about and come up with some answer to problems that they may be facing or they may pose you. You're not the sort of person who needs their hand holding. You're the sort of person who can come to authoritative, independent judgment of your own. And that is, I think, a good thing from a career point of view, but it's also a good thing and something that's worth having in its own right. Because what you hopefully can develop if you wish to engage with us is the capacity to make your own judgments about the most complex and difficult contemporary issues that arise in the law. So that's a rough idea of what it's about. I'm open to any questions you've got. Yes. Yeah, they sure are, yes. They're very, very important. You will be, insofar as we rank exam results, GCSE results, they are ranked contextually. So candidates are ranked relative to the average, how far above the average of their school they are, not by their absolute results. So that's, I believe, don't quote me on this because I could be wrong, I think that's school policy, but generally that's the way we approach. So we're interested in how much above your school average GCSE result you're doing, the reason for that is because that gives us a very good I believe this, I'm not sure it's entirely a settled matter, but it gives us a very good sense of how well you work independently, because obviously you're in a school with very high performing in a very high performing school, you're in an atmosphere that's much easier to perform well. So the contextual data tells us something really useful. But that's, I should add, though, that that isn't the be-all and end-all. That's not the only criteria we use in order to make the selection, but that's the way that those results are read. How so? You mean in the admissions process? Or in the first year we teach mooting is included in one of the subjects, and we will certainly, a lot of student presentation comes in the later courses, not so much in the first year, but in the later courses. But they are not part of the formal assessment. So they will go into the way references will be written for you and so on, but not part of the formal assessment at the moment. That may change in the next 3 years, but I wouldn't bank on it. The approach of the law department is very much favour closed book exams. As I say, may change there first. Yes, the department doesn't facilitate that directly, although careers office and all of that have get the law firms in, and that's all done through the LSE careers. You will find that there's how shall I put it? There's a very lively network of discussion within the department about those opportunities. If anything, a little bit too lively, in my own view. You'll find at certain points in your career people get obsessed about that question of where placements and so on are available, but you'll have no difficulty in finding out, but we don't formally facilitate that. Someone be down here first.
You said earlier about studying here with your job and going on to do it
here. Yeah.
One last year. How does that work?
You, Yeah, we don't teach the GDL at LSE, the graduate diploma in law. So nearby City University does it, Westminster do it, lots of universities do, but we don't. It's a one-year course. What you won't get from it is so much of the sense of law as a social science. You won't get so much of time to reflect or develop your thoughts. You'll get seven courses, the seven compulsory courses for a law qualifying degree, crammed into you in a year, and it's hard work. So it's much more narrowly focused on the law than the LLB is, but we don't teach it. Yes? That's a good question. Hard willingness to work hard. I mean, you've got to work hard, quite hard to get here, but really hard work it is crucial for a law degree. But you will find that one thing about the LSE is that it has a very hard-working environment. I mean, I think that's one thing you might want to bear in mind. You know, if you want to punt along a river and, you know, drink and do whatever they do, in, you know, or hang out in a nice green leafy campus with people like you and have a relaxing 3 years, it's probably not the place. It does have quite a hard-working student culture, and that's not just the law department here. I mean, and I think quite a hard-playing culture as well, but it is hard-working. So a willingness to risk yourself, I think, is very helpful. So you'll be fine. You know, people are more or less shy, but a willingness to put yourself out there, particularly verbally. I think in classes, a capacity to take risks, to try and answer questions and be wrong, and be willing to be wrong, and not be anxious about that. Not being overly concerned about what other people think about you, other students think about you, will pay you great dividends. And then the other thing, and this is the crucial thing, which I think is difficult to communicate, but being willing not to run away from difficulty. I think being able to confront difficulty, you know, the materials at certain points will get difficult. And if they don't get difficult, if you get through the whole 3 years and it was never hard, you haven't done it right because you've not pushed yourself to your capacity. It's when you're reading and you think, I can't make sense of this. Why does he say that and she says that? That doesn't add up. Some students say, oh, well, I must be just too stupid. I'll go and find something easier that I can understand. People who do really well persist at that point. They go, no, I've got to break through this. And they go off and they read around other materials, they read the cases, they read other books in order to crack that problem. I think that a willingness to stick at it when intellectually it gets tough is probably the most important thing. I mean, that will be true in any course, in any higher education course, but if you want to do really well, I think that's the thing I would most favour. Now, I've got lots of people at the back first. Right, oh, okay, yeah.
The personal statement.
The personal statement we will be looking for. Why you will be an interesting person to teach law to. And the way you can communicate that is, it's very difficult this, it's like the defining the elephant. I can't give you a definition, there is no model, but as soon as you read it, you know the ones that really stand out. And so the people who might be able not to cure, but to do their personal statement. We will have an awful lot of very good applications on GCSE results, on predicted A-level results. You know, and so we then have to choose between people with very, very good academic results. So one of the ways, the referees are very important, the other thing is the personal statement. A personal statement that stands out from the crowd is going to help you a lot. And it will stand out from the crowd if it demonstrates that you have really thought about it. So you can say, oh, I did weeks, you know, in a solicitor's and I've done my Duke of Edinburgh and all of that, and that's all fine. But don't just list a whole set of extracurricular achievements. Use them to show why you're interested in law. Deploy them to show why you're interested in law. And how do you know, how do you know you're interested in law? Well, there's only one way to find out, and that's to start finding out about law. And I would really recommend that you... the simplest way is to go to the Telegraph or the Guardian law pages. Type in Google, Daily Telegraph Law, Guardian Law, if you've never done it before. Go to their law pages. There are scores of stories. Follow some of the stories. Just follow them as they develop over time. Get interested. Find out about legal pressure groups or campaigns or charities that do voluntary work in law. Involve yourself in them. Not so much as a box to tick, look, I can put that on the personal statement, but in order to start thinking about it and have something to say about it. It's very hard for me to explain this, but I've read many, many personal statements, and the ones that stand out are ones that demonstrate that the person has a real powerful interest in the subject, and that's there because they have a real powerful interest in the subject. The only way, there's no formula to that. Take an interest in the subject, and you'll be able to express that in your personal statement. So that will be my advice. And you don't have to do formal placements in order to do that. You can do that by reading and thinking about the subject and any aspects of it. So that would be my advice about that. And also, it's legitimate to tell us you want to be a lawyer. That's fine, but don't go on about it. What we want to know is why you're interested in studying law, not why you want to be a lawyer. That's an important distinction in our minds. I would be an interesting person to teach law to. Your motivation for being a lawyer might be more important when you get to the legal professional training courses, but that's not what we're doing. Yes. We don't interview... I was about to say we don't interview any. We do interview some mature students, but people coming straight from school, we don't interview at all, unless it's very special circumstances. Down here is the point. It's on the list of non-preferred subjects that the school has, that the LSE has. So if you're studying law, don't study any of the other non-preferred subjects. The non-preferred subjects, in anticipation of this question, that's the list.
It's on the, if you go to the admissions pages of the website. Realistically, you're not going to get a place if you do more than one of these subjects. If you do one, it's okay.
If you're thinking about doing law A-level, don't do it from the point of view of getting in a law place here. We're not particularly interested in it. The ideal A-level combinations are the hardcore maths, physics, chemistry, the hardcore reasoning, but mixing that up with history or English is good. Mixture of arts, social science subjects and science subjects is good. There's no model... formula for doing them, but avoid these subjects and certainly don't do more than one of them. If you're doing law, don't panic, you can still apply, but if you're doing more than one of these, you might be in trouble. Yeah. Yeah, we don't do the LNAT test. So it's only, we don't interview, we don't do the LNAT test, we just, except for some mature students, we just look at the UCAS forms. And assess on that basis. Right at the back. I don't want to prescribe to you the extracurricular activities that you should do in order to get a place at the LSE, because I think you should do extracurricular activities that you like doing. If you do that, you will do them well. And doing things well, and doing things that particularly that show that you can work hard and achieve, are valuable. They show that you've got application. So what it is of less interest to me than the fact that you can show that you do it well or that you're really into it. So obviously, if you can play a musical instrument to grade 8, stick it in, or whatever, grade 7, put it in. That shows you've applied yourself. If you've got a black belt in karate, fantastic, because you have to do a bit of work and you have to do that over a long period. Those kind of things are great, but show that they're things that include those things that show that you've engaged with the world and you've worked hard, and show that you can work hard and independently. Beyond that, obviously, if you have extracurricular activities that are law-related, obviously, there could be, shouldn't be quite so general, but are positively related to the law, then that's great. I don't want to, it's what you do well that counts, and do it well. It's a hard-working place. Show that you can work hard and that you enjoy that, and that would be great, however you show it. Yeah, good.
You're saying, waiting for me, in terms of marks in second and third year,
equally weighted.
Yep. Yep.
Because you
have. You have qualifications from a different jurisdiction. Oh, wow.
I'm new in Hong Kong. Yeah, but you've taken some qualifications in Hong Kong.
I'm taking the AFH.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like a very specific question. It's a very specific admissions question. There is a talk on applying, isn't there, in the program? Is there an applying talk?
Yeah.
Ask them there, because that sounds too specific for me.
I'm a mere humble criminal lawyer. Yes, in the middle.
We have a
maximum limit of 15. So they tend to be between 12 and 15, the classes. The school, I should say, because you may come across this, there is a proposal at school level to relax that, give departments discretion. That's a school rule across all of the departments. There is a proposal to relax that, which may come forward and be decided on, but the law department's taken the view that we won't change that. That will remain. And as I say, most of the classes will be taught by full-time members of staff, academic staff. Some, at the moment about 10% are over the entire LLB, are taught by postgraduate students. But our postgraduate students are extremely good future academics.